And I think the biggest misconception, at least from my perspective, is that Tesla, whether it's with product or technology or production capabilities, can do things that other automakers cannot. Other automakers have other platforms that can fund new development, where Tesla really has to go back to the equity markets or the debt markets to do so. So I think the fact that it's losing money and burning cash is the competitive advantage right now. Other automakers don't want to do that.
Lethal heat waves, dead crops, and increased starvation. A stark reality for a fifth of the world's population by the end of the century, according to a new study on the harmful effects of climate change in South Asia. Scientists say that if global warming continues at its current rate, blistering temperatures will make parts of India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh unlivable by the year 2100.
Mondelez International, one of the world's largest chocolate makers, reporting a significant drop in sales Wednesday because of shipping delays caused by a computer virus. Costly cyber attacks are impacting the bottom line at more and more major companies, a problem highlighted by the NotPetya virus that crippled Ukraine businesses in June and spread worldwide.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's August 3rd, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad, as always, that you're here with us for our new edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day is underway. Lots to cover in this program. A little bit later on, we'll talk about Foxconn, the big technology plant coming to southeast Wisconsin. We'll talk with one of the manufacturing organizations and government organizations in Wisconsin to talk a little bit about what this means, not only for that state, but for Northern Illinois, perhaps, as well. And we'll watch your money throughout the hour with the latest from the Associated Bank Market Desk, which we'll start at right now. Asian markets mostly fell today as the rally from the news of Apple's strong earnings that spurred record highs for the Dow faded, a myriad of worries over China's rising debt, weaker commodity prices, and possible rising tensions between China and Washington overshadowed regional markets. This morning in Asia, we'll start there with the numbers. The Nikkei is off about, let's see here, let's get this market refreshing itself just as I go to it. How about that? That always happens, right? The Nikkei off about a quarter now. 50 points, almost 51 points. The Hang Seng is off a quarter as well, down about 76 points. Futures are pointing toward opening gains, perhaps mixed gains on Wall Street this morning, with numbers on the NASDAQ higher, but the Dow futures are a little bit lower. In Europe this morning, everything seems to be going well, except for the DAX, which is off just about a quarter percent. FTSE's higher, and so is the CAC. Oil is trading this morning at $49.79. a barrel. Yesterday, Wall Street rose 0.2% to a record 22,016.24. Standard & Poor's 500 added less than 0.1%, and the NASDAQ was flat. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. One day after getting sued by 15 states, Environmental Protection Agency Chief Scott Pruitt is reversing his decision to delay implementation of an Obama-era rule reducing emissions of smog-causing air pollutants. In a statement yesterday evening, Pruitt presents the change as his agency being more responsive than past administrations to the needs of state environmental regulators. He makes no mention of the legal challenge filed that was at the crux of what happened here. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman says he and others who sued will continue to hold Pruitt and the EPA accountable. It is Thursday. That means it's our thought leader conversation. We're happy to have with us Breck Hansen. He's the vice chairman of Associated Bank. We'll have a wide-ranging discussion this morning. But first, let's welcome in Breck. Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good to see you. Looks like summer's treating you well.
It's been a good one.
Yeah. Cubs are doing good finally?
They are.
Yeah.
And it's not over, but the feeling is good.
Yeah, it feels really good. Listen, I want to get your thoughts on some news that's developing over the last 24 hours or so, and that's we're seeing construction numbers sort of soften. Earlier this week, the government reported construction spending fell by 1.3%. A little bit of weakness there that's concerning. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've got a couple thoughts. First of all, some of that's probably infrastructure construction, and some of it's development construction. And, you know, having been in the banking business, it's pretty well known that if banks are willing to fund developers, they'll build something. And I think that banks have become more cautious for a number of reasons. One is that, you know, inflation really isn't moving as quickly as we thought. But two is there are two sectors of the real estate business that are really questionably beginning to be overbuilt, and that's apartments and retail. We've built thousands nationwide of apartment units the last several years, and banks are the regulators are telling banks to be careful of how much exposure they have in that product in their portfolio. Think back to 2007, 2008, when we built a plethora of condominiums, and you know what happened there.
Yeah.
The flip side of it is where retail is going to be for the consumer in the next year, in the next 5 years, is really a question. With all the automation, the Amazons of the world, the major shopping mall, the grocer, it's all a different model. And, you know, you can just tell by if you follow the stock market at all that retail stocks have really suffered recently. So if you're not building retail and you're not building apartments, you know, warehouses are being built because of this Amazon-type phenomena. But in a dollar amount, they're the cheapest buildings to build. And then there's office buildings. So it's not surprising that construction might be going down.
So if I were a developer, what would be most likely to get money from a bank these days? If I came to you and said, I want to build a big mall, or I wanted to build a bunch of homes, or wanted to build, let's say, a $10 billion Foxconn plant.
Well, I'd say I don't know about a Foxconn plant because of the size, but a distribution center for Amazon, easy to build, good credit, and appears to be something that's going to be around at least for the next couple of years.
It seems like the one of the models you kind of touched on this is that some of these stores that maybe now we see in Nordstrom's or Macy's or Sears are going to be more of a pickup place where we go to pick up this stuff from their online area.
If they've got real estate, that might be what it's used for. But, you know, the model even today looks more like a warehouse where they just ship it out. And, you know, some of these retailers, you do ship out directly, but it's tough to compete with the Amazons of the world.
I tried to sneak in Foxconn there because I wanted to make it a nice, easy segue to that topic. But this is the other big deal is this is $10 billion, perhaps 13,000 jobs before it's all said and done. This plant in Wisconsin, maybe Racine, maybe Kenosha, maybe both counties. Talk to me a little bit about how big of a deal this is for the two-state area.
Well, first of all, it's consistent with the pro-job administration and the pro-employment administration that Governor Walker has had in Wisconsin. He's done a marvelous job. In fact, I believe unemployment now, and, you know, we're headquartered in Wisconsin, but unemployment's down in the very low single digits in the state. And he's been able to do that, which as you get to those numbers, you would hope you'd drive wages up. Secondly, because of the location they picked, the Racine Kenosha, and we talked about it earlier, Steve, it's got to have an impact on the state of Illinois and jobs for the people here, which indirectly is a really good thing. And I think I'm a little prejudiced coming from Chicago, but technological skills, Chicago seems to be, at least in the Midwest, a hotbed for that. So it should be good.
Yeah, before we came on the air, we had the rulers out, and we were calculators and doing a little figuring. They say this is going to be the size of perhaps three pentagons. If you've ever been to the Pentagon, you know how huge that is. We're talking tens of millions of square feet. But still, even with all the jobs and all the positive news around us, there's a few people out there that are still saying, not so fast. Are we paying? Are we giving too many incentives to this company that's kind of had a checkered past in terms of what it's actually produced in other countries?
Well, the incentives in theory, don't bother me, because what happens is you're not really, people think, well, we're giving them money if they don't pay the state taxes that others may pay. But if they didn't make those kind of concessions, we wouldn't have those jobs and we wouldn't have that revenue stream coming out of the state. And the other part of the question, Steve, was?
It was just, you know, the history of this company, Foxconn.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on Foxconn, but what you read, they've had announcements like this, I believe, in the state of Pennsylvania. They've had it in three other foreign countries where it really didn't come to fruition. So I'd put this one in a cautiously optimistic. The size you're talking about, 20 million square feet, if we just get started with 2 or 3 million and add a few jobs, we're in good shape.
And the way you've seen these things unfold over time, maybe not this size, but when you get a company like this that's put this much space in, there's going to be all kinds of ancillary development as well, probably in Wisconsin and Illinois along the border.
Oh, it's already happening. Yeah. I mean, if you've taken a drive from Chicago to Milwaukee, after you pass the border, both sides are warehouses. The most significant or the most well-known being Amazon, but all kinds of companies are building in that corridor now. So this will just add to it. And we're getting to the point where we're closer to one metropolitan area.
Yeah. And good-paying jobs potentially as well always tend to help the local economy. That can't really hurt any. Talk to me a little bit about what kinds of ancillary development you might think would happen there. Are we talking about, like, shipping? Are we talking about supplies for this Foxconn plant, all of the above?
Well, I think it's you say shipping, logistics, certainly, and supplies. I think that it's interesting. Most of what Foxconn does is support the Googles and the Amazons. And so with plants there, I would think, you know, Amazon's there, but you may see Amazon do more in that area than just a distribution center. There may be some product development, some backroom kind of things going on. And I'd say the same for Google and other tech industries like that.
Let's talk some more about the economy. There's been a lot of attention placed on inflation over the last couple of weeks, especially after the Federal Reserve meeting as well. Lots of concern about that. Why should we be paying attention to that from a banking standpoint?
Well, what seems to be happening, and Janet Yellen is a believer, it sounds like, is unemployment is clearly going down, not only in the state of Wisconsin, but nationwide. And historically, economists have seen a relationship between inflation and unemployment numbers. That being, the more people that are employed, the better inflation or the inflation numbers go up. What's happened here is unemployment has actually shrunk, and we're not getting the bump in the economy inflationary-wise that we thought. The explanations to that, I would use the word uncertainty. I've heard others use the word there's a new noise in what we do, and that noise is technology. That noise is Amazon reaching out and buying, what was it, Whole Foods?
Whole Foods.
Whole
mm-hmm.
Foods. Who'd have thought, and you sit back and think, like you ask me what kind of industries might be going into our area because of this boom. Who'd have thought that technology would move into the food business this quickly? And what's the next one? And so I think people in general, although they may have a job and their wages may go up a slight bit because of it, aren't spending at nearly the rate that they did pre-2007, 2006. Our memories, it's 10 years ago now, are still pretty good about what we thought, and the uncertainty of what these developments are really going to do to the economy is there. And then the second thing is back to the current administration and what they can accomplish in the way of bank regulatory, which will allow companies to make more money and things like that. And it hadn't happened.
You know, it's that disruption aspect of the Amazon story. As much as that can be sort of exciting, I'm hearing you say that it's also kind of concerning because you don't know where it's going to happen yet. Example, you know, Amazon also talked about adding its own team of people that go into your home and fix your internet and fix your computer. And immediately Best Buy decides it's going to get rid of the Geek Squad because it just can't compete against Amazon. That's both exciting and scary, isn't it?
Well, I think we all can kind of look at what we do for a living and figure out how we might be replaced by a robot or by some group like Amazon that thinks better than we do or knows more and can think outside the box. That's the caution.
But is it smarter and more good-looking? That's the question, I think, right?
Well, we're on radio.
Yeah. Breck, you're one of the best probably at having relationships and fostering relationships. You come in and we talk before the program gets going, and even though we've only met recently, I feel like I've known you forever. These relationships, how do you build them as a banker? I mean, I'm sure you're an old pro at this, but how do you do it and make them last?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We talk about banking, and especially to the entrepreneurial banker that doesn't have an annual report, or the entrepreneurial customer that doesn't have an annual report that they hand out and that the world knows their business. I grew up at LaSalle Bank primarily, which was a relationship bank here in the city. And I think it's because of the regulatory concerns or the regulatory restrictions that have been put on banks, it's probably more important than ever that you get to know your banker and your banker gets to know you. And that's spending time, but I think most of all, that's sharing information. And, you know, there's a cliche that says, you know, well, I tell my banker everything. Well, you know what? That's not so much a cliche as it makes it a lot more comfortable when you've got to work through problems. The flip side of it is, as bankers, we've had to tell our clients who think it's just easy for us to take care of them what's happened regulatory-wise and what kind of capital requirements we have, what kind of restrictions we have on exposures to certain kind of industries, to certain clients, and it's just a contact person-to-person thing that, frankly, in this technological age, isn't as normal as it might have seemed several years ago.
Yeah. That was going to be my next question. Is it more personal or has it become technical? Do you still go and have those face-to-face interactions, or is this by the telephone or by email or by text?
I still do.
Personal, that
personal.
Is.
Yeah. I still pick up the phone and call people, but I'm not convinced that that's the way it's going. And, you know, call me a dinosaur, but I don't think it's the best thing for banking relationships.
You mean having the technical relationship
right.
Isn't the best.
Right.
And these are good examples that really you could use in all different types of industry and employment. How do you also foster sort of those mentor relationships? I would imagine you'd be a good mentor for someone young coming up in the business. Do you go reach out and try to find some of those people?
Well, the bank at Associated, we have a leading leaders program. Mm-hmm. And in particular, when we put people in that program that we think are the future management leadership of the bank, we assign them a mentor. And we assign them a mentor based on what they want to do, that mentor's experience. I think there are formal mentor programs. And then I don't know if you seek out or people seek out, but I think over the years I've had many mentors. And I think they're not necessarily chosen or picked. They happen because of a mutual respect for each other. The other thing I'd say is that I kind of subscribe to the theory of something called a personal board of directors. And what I'm saying is your mentor in your marriage might be a different mentor than a mentor in your financial issues or in your career issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I encourage young people to think about, oh, the five or six key areas where they may need guidance and kind of create that personal board of directors.
I thought of you earlier this week when Bartman got his ring. You are probably, among all of our thought leaders, the biggest Cubs fan, and I just want to know, are you going to get a ring as well?
No, and I'm happy for Steve Bartman.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he'd come out of the woodwork, though. I'd like you to interview the guy.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of those things that he's hoping that this finally goes away once and for all.
Won't happen.
Yeah.
It's part of lore.
Brett, good to see you. Go Cubs.
Go Cubs. Thanks, Steve.
And Brett Hansen is the vice chair of Associated Bank, and in our thought leader conversation today, we do these thought leader conversations every Thursday here on the Opening Bell, and we're going to continue our conversation with Brett after the bell and post that on our podcast of the Opening Bell later this morning at WGNradio.com. And remember, you can listen to past conversations right there at WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page, and make sure you follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell, and Foxconn is in our focus this morning. The big plant coming to Wisconsin, one of the big suppliers for iPhone, Apple, among others, the digital displays, the glass displays. It's going to be a major infrastructure plan, manufacturing plant that could be the size of several Pentagons, and Southeast Wisconsin is the likely location for this. We thought we'd bring in Scott Manley this morning. He's the Senior Vice President of Government Relations at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is the state's Chamber of Commerce, the state's Manufacturers Association, the state's Safety Council. Scott, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Well, and congratulations to all of you in Wisconsin for landing this plant, Foxconn. This is a major deal for Wisconsin, I guess.
It really is major. I mean, we're incredibly excited about it. We believe it will be transformational to our economy, not just in Southeast Wisconsin, we understand it to be up to 20 million square feet of manufacturing facilities will be built, but for our state as a whole and our region as a whole. And when we look at the types of jobs that are going to be created as a part of this project, these are, you know, strong family-supporting middle-class careers for people. So, yeah, the level of excitement in Wisconsin over this is extremely high.
I know a lot of this is still coming together, and there's going to have to be a vote by the legislature there on some of the different sorts of mm-hmm. things that brought the company there. But I want to ask you about a little bit of developing news on Foxconn this morning that you're probably aware of. The Wisconsin Journal Sentinel is reporting that there may be a second site that this company is eyeing in Wisconsin. Do you know anything about that?
You know, I really don't know a whole lot more than what's been reported, other than when the deal that Governor Walker signed with Foxconn's chairman, Terry Goh, they signed that deal, and Chairman Goh said, look, you know, we're excited about being in Wisconsin. We want to make significant investments here. And the company alluded to the fact that they may indeed look beyond simply the partnerships that they're going to have with Wisconsin to build flat panel televisions in Southeast Wisconsin. So I guess I can't say that, you know, for sure that they are looking in the Madison area to build as well, but it certainly looks like we're at least getting strong consideration, and we view that as a positive thing.
Yeah, and that would just be a sort of an added bonus, sort of like the icing on the cake, I would imagine. Scott, talk to me a little bit about how all of this came together. I know, again, some of this is still coming together, but how do you go after a company like Foxconn, and what does it take to sell your state and bring this sort of improvement in investment to the state?
Well, you know, I think it begins with you have to have positioned yourself as a state that a company like Foxconn is even really willing to have the opening conversation with in the first place. And I would argue to you that 6 years ago, Wisconsin would not have even been in that position. I don't think we would have even received serious consideration. But the groundwork for this Foxconn deal was really laid starting in 2011 when Governor Walker took office with a number of really important pro-business, pro-growth reforms like right to work. We essentially eliminated the income tax for manufacturers. We enacted some sweeping tort reforms that actually won Wisconsin a national award for positioning our litigation climate in this state as a fair and transparent system. And, you know, I think the totality of the reforms, the tax cuts, positioning Wisconsin to be in a strong financial situation. We're dealing with a budget surplus in our state. It all, you know, it's just a series of things that I think Wisconsin has done the right way that makes us attractive to an international company like Foxconn to come in and say, hey, yeah, that's a great place to do business. Wisconsin's headed in the right direction, and we want to be a part of it.
There have been a lot of eyes raised, though, about the $3 billion price tag of incentives in this. And your role as government relations, I'm sure you deal with lawmakers up there every day. How is this going over with them? And what about those people who say this might be too many incentives?
Well, you know, I think that you're always going to have naysayers whenever you do something this large and this transformational. But the sense that we're getting from lawmakers is that, look, yeah, $3 billion is a lot of money, but 13,000 jobs is a lot of jobs. And the way that these incentives are structured, you know, Foxconn's just not going to get the tax credits unless they create the jobs. It's sort of like a performance contract for a professional sports athlete, like a major league pitcher who earns incentives based on, you know, how many strikeouts or how many saves or how many wins they get, or a professional football player who earns incentives based on touchdowns or rushing yards or receiving yards. So it's really one of those things where, yeah, it is a lot of money, but taxpayers will only pay that money in exchange for real jobs created and real dollars invested in our state.
There's also the long-term aspect of this, too. You were talking earlier about the quality of jobs here, the types of jobs that will be created. Not only will those be created, but there's a window here of potentially years, maybe even a decade of employment.
Yeah, we think it's at least that. And the number that Foxconn has been using is an average of just more than $53,000 a year in wages alone. And then, of course, there will be, health care and other fringe benefits on top of that. And $53,000 a year is a solid middle class job in Wisconsin. We have a very low cost of living in our state, and we have, which is driven by, I think especially compared to the Chicagoland area, very affordable housing. So you can stretch a family budget pretty far on $53,000 a year from just one income. And then, as we said, the incentives are a 15-year period. And what that tells us, and Foxconn agreed to that, is that they intend to make investments here that will go well into the future. And investments really that we think are going to drive really a high-tech ecosystem in southeastern Wisconsin, where not just Foxconn, but many other companies will come here to invest, to be suppliers or service sector companies that will help drive economic growth. So, you know, I think Foxconn is talking about 13,000 direct jobs over the next 6 to 10 years, and then another 22,000 indirect or induced jobs on top of that. So again, just really transformational economic impacts for our region.
And speaking of that ecosystem, it's one that's going to undoubtedly fall over into Illinois as well. Have you gotten a thank you note yet from anybody in Illinois for the work you guys are doing on this?
No, you know, but I think this is a tremendous opportunity really for Illinois as well, because, you know, one of the good problems that we have in Wisconsin is that our economy is growing so well and our unemployment is so low, and we've seen great wage growth in our state. It's actually been difficult for employers to find workers. And when we have Foxconn coming in and creating, you know, up to 13,000 jobs and many others that are sort of ripple effect jobs from that project, we're going to need to hire a lot of people in Southeast Wisconsin. And I think there's going to be a lot of economic opportunity for workers in the Chicago area who want to work at Foxconn and earn a great living. And we hope actually consider moving to our state and take advantage of our low cost of living. But also, you know, there's a lot of manufacturing that takes place in northern Illinois, and there's going to be a need for suppliers and transportation and warehousing, and just a lot of economic opportunity for the, you know, for the probably 50 to 75 miles radius around Southeast Wisconsin, which certainly includes northern Illinois.
Some exciting times ahead, Scott. We appreciate you getting up and being with us this morning and the opening bell.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, Scott Manley, he's the Senior Vice President of Government Relations at the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, WMC.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are flat as we head toward the opening bell later this morning. Dow futures at flat zero, S&P off about a fraction now. NASDAQ up just about 7 points. Gold and silver trading lower. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The corn and soybean market firmed yesterday, coming back from one-month lows set in both commodities a day earlier. December corn settled up 2.5 cents at $3.79 a bushel. Soybeans ended up 5.75, $9.77.5 a bushel. And the wheat market, just a slight change, September down 0.5 cents. Turning to livestock, live cattle futures climbed higher yesterday thanks to short covering and also some futures discounts to early week cash cattle prices. Wednesday, some market-ready or cash cattle in Kansas brought $116 to $117. The August contract of live cattle ended at $1.72 higher at $114.52. And the hog market, helped by some bargain buying there, the August contract, which expires on the 14th of this month, up $2.15 a hundredweight at $81.95. It is not a good year so far for the fertilizer industry. Earlier this week, Mosaic reported a drop in its quarterly earnings report, and yesterday, fertilizer producer CF Industries reported a 93% decline in quarterly profit and said it expects nitrogen pricing to be challenged through 2017 and 2018. Today, opening day at the Wisconsin State Fair in West Allis, a 10-day run, and county fairs. The Kankakee County Fair is underway in Kankakee, Kendall County Fair in Yorkville, Joe Davies County Fair in Warren, and, of course, the McHenry County Fair underway in Woodstock. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuels.
Thanks, Orion. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday, August 3rd, today, the Labor Department reports on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Also, the Commerce Department reports on U.S. factory orders for June. The Institute for Supply Management, a trade group of purchasing managers, issues its Index of Non-Manufacturing Activity for July. Freddie Mac will report on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. It's also another big day for earnings. Weight Watchers, Hyatt Hotels, Yum Brands, Aetna GoPro, and Chicago's Kraft Heinz all reporting earnings. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, August the 3rd.